Here's a song I got for you. Levy and Bells and Donald and Quinnen. Guess what, New York? It's time to start winning.
David. Football. Football, David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Can I tell you something? Beautiful. A beautiful singing voice.
Dulcet tones.
Thanks, you.
Is that a tenor? I think that's probably a tenor. Is that an alto?
Both.
I'm going to say just above a baritone, you know.
All of them.
Can you do a falsetto?
I can do whatever the musical requirement is, Matt.
I hear you have perfect pitch.
Yeah, it was just a splendid, splendid time there in Nashville, Tennessee. There you just heard me singing songs to some of the first-round fancy pants, Devin Bush, Devin White. He gets my top grade for the most delightful of the first-rounders. Stiff competition, though, backstage there last Thursday night. Anywho, hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. As you just heard there, seated to my immediate left is one Mad Money Smith. Of course, you listen to him on the Petros and Money Show. Download that at iHeartRadio. He's doing fantasy football already. It's barely springtime, and he's kibitzing with Fabiano and the rest about what the NFL draft means for your fantasy team. Draft, people are going to start drafting sooner than you realize.
Running mocks, doing all that sort of stuff, yeah.
And regular season will be here. Let's start chopping up what the NFL looks like post 2019 draft, including Josh Rose. And then also talk a little Game of Thrones, shall we? And first, though, hit it, Spaghetti. It's Matt Money Smith's theme music.
We don't have time for that.
Yeah, you're right. Let's not even.
Can I start with something special?
I'd like you to. It was an emotional roller coaster for some people.
Let's get back to April 25th, shall we? April 25th.
That's draft night.
Let's go. Here we go. All caps. All caps, right? This is before the moment of truth. All caps. Take Josh Allen and be done with it, Giants. Trying to
It was sitting
perfectly
there for him at six.
We know Gettleman loves pass rushers. You got to be able to you get a passer and you got to get to the passer. That's how you win a Super Bowl.
And Gettleman told the world the day before the draft, he said, listen, we want two starters. You know
what we're looking for.
Week one starters here. So, of course, yeah, the build around Eli and Saquon.
Yeah, but about a minute later, no longer all caps, by the way. So this is the guy we're giving the keys to the kingdom to. Not an elite pass rusher. A guy who is probably worse than every QB taken in last year's first round. The answer is yes. That's the guy.
The inexplicable part. Above all else to me is, and I don't know if it's Steve Keim down there in Arizona. I don't know if it's Gettleman, but what gives with Josh Rosen? If the notion was, as NFL media's Pete Schrager, swell fella, caught up with him and he said, you know, he's not one to pat himself on the back. But I said, you were the first guy really to say Kingsbury took that gig because of Kyler Murray. He wasn't going to leave USC. He had just taken the USC gig to be their OC. And then when Arizona came calling, he said, first overall, if we can have Kyler Murray, I'm taking that gig. And so you knew that you were going to try to move Josh Rosen, didn't you? Why did you wait till the day of the draft?
That it is weird. Odd, yeah.
Why didn't the Giants call the Cardinals and say, we want Josh Rosen?
They said they did. The new SI article mentions it, and Steve Keim just like didn't want to trade. He kept waiting and waiting and waiting, and then quarterbacks went, and then the team's like, well, we don't need him now, and then they got screwed with the later second-round pick.
The thing is, though, like there's something there. There's just got to be. There has to be. There's no way a guy with that type of talent, that arm talent, that ability to diagnose and work his way through progressions, who's going to make $6 million over the next 3 years and you get to pay him nothing, less than you would pay your backup. There's something. I refuse to believe that there's not an issue. And I'm not saying I know there is, but it's gonna eventually come out. And
I hear your noise. I hear your noise, and it's not vapid cynicism. This is legitimate. Obviously, if they're looking to move the guy, and you always hear from Jim Mora coming out before he was even out of UCLA, and kind of despair. You were hearing those whispers and everything. I hear all that, but isn't that also what describes so many of not capable QBs. I mean the high-end QBs. Is that they're, you know, that their greatest weapon is their brain, and therefore isn't Peyton Manning, didn't he dictate the offensive coordinators and not the other way around what the score was?
And
look, that's what Josh, the knock on Josh Rosen is,
well,
he thinks he's too smart. He thinks he doesn't need any help.
And I think if you were to magnify that, it's that he's too tough to coach, that he is so convinced that he's smarter than anybody else that's trying to help him and make him better and get him to run an offense that they want him to run, that he just won't listen to him, that he believes he knows more than they do. So beat it. I don't want to hear, you know, and then you wonder, OK, is he putting in work? Is he willing to put in the work, or does that then belief that he is smarter than everybody in the room also preclude him from actually spending time working out, spending time watching film, because that's also what you can fall victim to if you do have this false
Peyton,
sense
no matter
of belief.
What, was always burning the midnight
butt.
Oil.
Yes, right, yes, no question.
He earned the right to say, I know better than you because I've watched more film than anybody else. But anyway, so
right,
Josh,
wouldn't you agree? It's got to be something. Like, how do the Bengals take Ryan Finley in the third, and they're not willing to give up a second for Josh Rosen for $6 million. Like, that to me, that just doesn't line up when you see that. So
you're more plugged in than I am, certainly, but I hear all the little scuttlebutt. I hear most of the scuttlebutt, I guess. And that the recurring thing is, well, he just thinks he thinks that he already knows it all, so there's no reason to try and help him. That seems like a recurring evaluation. I will say, I guess I talk about being cynical. The artifice of PR certainly has helped him in the last few days. He's
been great.
Somebody's in his ear, or maybe it's all him. But well, either way, it does seem like he's
no dummy. He knows he can't
very
be petulant
now
on the way out, because that's his reputation, right? Is that he's petulant and that he's a know-it-all. So on the way out, you got to be great, nice. Here it is. I'm kind of funny. See, guys, I can fit into the locker room. Bing, bang, boom. Huh? I got a 2-bedroom apartment, Kyler. See, I got a zinger too. On the way out, It was also kind of weird the way the Dolphins, that press conference went, right? With where they're like, you know, Greer's like, well, yeah, maybe it's not precluding us from taking somebody in 2020. He's going to have to fight for the job, you know. We're not just going to hang it there. It's like, wait a minute. Really? This is how I'm starting my career in Miami, where I'm not the guy. You could still draft a quarterback in a year. Like, boy, this is way to bring out the welcome wagon for me.
I do think, though, in the last week, it's completely reversed, and now everybody's rooting for him.
I think you're absolutely
outside
right.
Outside of Kime.
Absolutely right.
You know, I mean, you know, and Kyler Murray probably doesn't want to see him go on and flourish in Miami, but otherwise it seems like most of football America is going to be rooting to see the Dolphins do well this year.
Bet on him or bet against him?
I loved him coming out of school, but you said something to me about a year ago that now I can't get rid of, which is that when you see him, I always say, I don't need all the copious, I don't need the combine results or anything else. I just watch them play in big time games and see what they look like and see what kind of figure they physically cut out there. And you said he's a little smallish on a pro football gridiron. And as soon as I saw him out there in 2018 autumn, I couldn't get that out of my head. He seems slight.
And he was a little stiff, too.
Yeah.
Like, the way he was moving, I was like, man, I remember this guy running all over the place.
Yeah, I could see him
running. Like, what happened there? Right. And, like, he just couldn't get away from anyone. And I was like, ooh, I don't know. Maybe something wrong here.
Spaghetti.
I think it was Doug Farrar that went through every one of his snaps and basically said that the risk of trading for him is very small, but the ceiling is extremely high because he did so many things right last year with an awful team. To go back with money saying with the red flag, some local, I think it was an ESPN guy, said that he was too focused on like environmental issues, and that also came up in the SI article. Like, he was trying to create these cleats out of like recycled plastic. And they were like, is his heart really in football, or is it beyond football? That was like the one thing that did pop up, if that's the main issue.
I mean, if he's not willing to put in work, that's fine. If you want to do that, great. You know, I think you applaud that. But if it's at the expense of playing football, then that's where you get concerned.
Well, last thing on Rosen, and we have many other subjects, many guys to cover, many teams to cover. But Rosen, to me, it feels like, if we're right that he thinks he's smarter than the coaches, well, Arizona wasn't a great spot for him with Mike McCoy and everybody else. I do think the passive QB whisper that is Jim Caldwell on a obviously defense first head coach, Brian Flores, that's kind of a nice fit for him, right?
I just don't know if there's enough talent. You know,
who's catching the passes?
Who's protecting him? Who's catching the passes? Is Kenyon Drake really a number one back, or is he better served as a spell back or in a rotation? Do they have another back? It just seems like it's very similar to the situation in Arizona, where there just wasn't a lot of talent in front of them. The thing about Miami is it's hard to kind of figure out. You look at certain parts where you're like, okay, I can see how this might work. But then you just kind of look at the division and you're like, man, I feel like obviously you have the Pats. Seems like the Jets got a heck of a lot better.
I think the Jets, I just was talking to Spaghetti before we began the spin here. I think the Jets are going to be good.
They got to play the AFC West this year. The Dolphins do. So it's like, or I think they do. Right? AFC? Oh, no, they don't. I'm sorry. They only play the Chargers because it's the second place schedule, and they were second place in the AFC. So I'm not sure who they're playing, but I can't figure it out. And I think if it's a team, and that seemed to be all the, again, what the heck do I know? A lot of the people around here that are reporters that cover this sort of thing have said, you know, you look at the departures and the signings and the way they're drafting, and looks like they're thinking about Tua or Justin Herbert or something. If that's the case, then it's going to be very similar to what he had in Arizona.
I guess.
How do you climb out of that hole? Two teams that have had a top five pick, you know, after you've been a quarterback for a season.
Well, if nothing else, they do. I don't care what jive they want to spin here in spring. They have to roll with the kid and see what he can do one way or the other. They're not going to.
I mean, it's a second round pick. It's not like they traded a sixth for him. I mean, that's still pretty good draft capital.
Patrick over him, right? Unless you are, in fact, trying to do the NFL's version of the Major League movie and intentionally put the worst possible team you possibly can. But we remember what Tom Berenger, Wesley Snipes, and Corbin Burnson put together. Ooh. Chaz Sheen coming out of the pen.
So that's
what Josh Rosen is going to do.
Sorry, they play the AFC North and the NFC East. So that is not easy. Having to deal with the Ravens, the Browns, the Steelers, and then you got to deal with the Eagles, the Cowboys. I mean, those are all good teams. So that's...
I agree,
tough.
But also my pushback on that is, as we sit here now, this is a phenomenon that happens every year, especially in the NFL, more so than NBA, NHL, or MLB. This is the time where you feel your very best as a fan, even Spaghetti the Giants fan. Everybody has some cause for optimism right now. I defy you to name for me a team you don't feel good about right now outside of the Dolphins and like one or two other. I perennially do it. I announce the six teams that are definitely not going to the playoffs and I
can't get
them
to six.
It's really hard to make a case that team's going to be garbage. Especially, you know, I met Devin White's delight as a delightful kid. That matters less than the other stuff, but the Bucks, you can kind of cobble together a case that they're not bad, that Bruce Arians turns Jameis around and everything falls into place after that one. But let's go to the Arizona Cardinals. They deal away Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray, now suddenly surrounded by a gaggle of pass catchers, plus David Johnson back there, plus some interesting defensive pieces left over from the Bruce Arians era. How say you? Do they have a playoff push in them with the kit? They do not.
Not with that O-line. I mean, that O-line was down to start, and then injuries destroyed it. The one issue is, right, we mentioned that Josh Rosen a little stiff trying to get to move around when pressure came. Kyler Murray could run. I mean, he can flat-out run. Mm. So that helps things a little bit. Playoffs, I'm going to say no. Fun? Yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, it is going to be – they're going to be rolling five wide. You're going to see that 4-3 Andy Isabella on jet sweeps. I'm anxious to see how Kingsbury wants to use David Johnson. And by all accounts, anyone you talk to that's ever been around Kyler Murray says how special a talent he is and just accuracy. Beautiful deep ball. When he starts moving those legs, he is gone. I mean, he is a blur. So it'll be fun. I just think that O-line,
tough. Let's see about Nick Bosa, but I stand by after the draft. My pre-draft prediction, the Niners will be your champions from the NFC West, although I did like what the Rams did and their little bounce back there. And I kept telling our pal Maurice Jones-Drew, you know it as well as I do, relatively early on in that draft, they're going to definitely go running back, and that will prove what I already know and what Maurice already knows, which is that Todd Gurley is not Todd Gurley, or at least you cannot expect that if you're Sean McVay. You have to replace him, and so they found what looks like a capable.
Yeah, they're selling Henderson as a, you know, coming out of that, and obviously you have to think about your $60 million investment to your owner, like, hey, you know, we just wrote this check, and now we're already drafting another guy, and you have to sell it to the fans because there's more Todd Gurley jerseys in the stands than anyone's. Maybe save Aaron Donald, but they're selling Henderson as a third down back, as someone who can line up in the slot, who can even line up out wide, can catch a lot of passes, a perfect fit at that position for a Sean McVay offense. So they're not saying that he's here to spell or ease the load on Gurley. They're saying he's, you know, Les Snead is selling him as a compliment and just a piece. Don't even think of him as a running back. Think of him as a valuable piece for Sean McVay. But I'm with you. I think
Todd Gurley's a sweetheart. If you've ever, he's a funny guy and everything else. But if, but you know, and he's loaded, so I'm not going to pity him too much. But it does. The signs do seem to point to that, and that's another division that now is wide open. And again, I defy you to the larger point, money and spaghetti, and anyone within the sound of my voice. What division does not look tough right now? When you do that, oh, they got to play that division. There's no division that'd be like,
Niners,
oh, that's
Seahawks,
pretty nice.
Rams.
That's nice. Oh, yeah. I like that one.
Yeah, Chiefs, Chargers.
You want the NFC North? You want the
Vikings, Packers, Bears, AFC North, Steelers, Browns, Ravens, AFC East.
Well, I mean, listen, I really do.
Who are you picking in the NFC East? Like, that to me, that's the
that
big one.
That division's crazy.
Right? That's the big one.
Listen, it was Alex Smith, and so it was a different team. But when he goes down, they were in first place.
That's what I mean. And that defense is good.
Look at the sneaky, nice picks that they
Montez
take
Sweat,
the
they get, yeah. they, you know, he slides down and they trade up to get him to pair with Ryan Kerrigan. They've always been good on all three levels. They still have, you know, Josh Norman there, who's plenty capable, and you add someone. And look, the thing about Sweat and being around these draft guys, you know, through the combine and this process, you know, yeah, he's an athlete, and clearly, guy runs 4.41 at that size. But one of the things they always say that I like to hear is they talk about his hands and heavy hands and shock hands that shock, you know. And so he's not only fast, but he can toss you, he can ragdoll you. So and you saw him do that against what SEC offensive lines. So that makes the Redskins interesting, right? The Eagles won a Super Bowl 2 years ago. You think about that defensive line.
Do you think, do you buy, I mean, how will we ever know? It's all speculation, but do you buy Gettleman's claim that the Skins would have taken Daniel Jones over Dwayne Haskins in that spot?
I don't buy it. I just don't.
You'll never find out.
You'll never know.
The Skins would never concede. No. Yeah. We wanted the other guy more.
Right, or the Dolphins were going to take him, and the Dolphins, who now have Josh Rosen, would never say, well, yeah, you know, unfortunately he was gone. We got to settle for Christian Wilkins, but, you know, whatever. So, yeah, you're right. We'll never know. I just don't think so. I did not feel that. I really didn't. It seemed like more people, the people that I was fortunate enough to talk to and ask about these sort of things, because, again, I don't know. I have no opinion on it, people I talked to, they don't see it. They see him as maybe a backup. They see him as a long-term project. You know, what their board goes, Haskins, Murray, Locke. You know, some of them had Finley above him. It was really weird. I heard there were teams that liked him that did believe he had some really good qualities.
I can't believe they did it. It's six.
Look, the guys, as Gettleman has said, he's drafted great quarterbacks before. He's gone to Super Bowls. He's been around. You know, maybe there is something that he sees that we don't. I don't know. I can't evaluate.
I'm going to say it one more time. I've said it for 3 months. I said it to Charles Davis when we did the mock draft, you, me, and the rest of the gang money before the draft on NFL Network. And I said it, you know, listen, if you're going to take, if you've decided that Eli Manning, you're going to retain him and continue to pay him, and you used the second overall on Saquon a year ago, and you have made these other moves in dealing away Odell Beckham, you are now pot committed, at least for 2019, to Eli Manning. Ergo, why would you take his successor? Especially, look at the QBs in the pipeline. Look at the three guys. There are at least three guys who will surely 11 months from now be more highly considered than Daniel Jones was coming out of college.
To Herbert, right? From.
Right. So, right? I mean, it just makes no sense. And as I keep saying, too, and they get some defensive pieces, and it looks kind of interesting. You just wonder, what if at six they had mixed in either Josh Allen or Montez Sweat? If they mix that in, and then the rest of their draft goes the way it goes.
Like, here's the thing. It doesn't matter. Like that, he's the guy. You know, like Gettleman believes it doesn't matter what we say, or like there was none of this conversation because Gettleman believes he is going to be a Super Bowl level quarterback, that he's got a Hall of Fame caliber starting quarter. And that's all that mattered to him. I mean, like that. Do we get it? No. I mean, but I'm not going to say I can evaluate quarterbacks better than Gettleman can. That's why he was selected there, because that's what that.
That's fine. But my point still stands.
I know what you mean, but I'm saying that's why he did it.
This year with Eli, if you protect him and everything, and Daniel Jones. But as far as that goes, money, you're back in Culver City, California. Eddie Spaghetti is watching it, and the voice you heard
in Nashville
at the very top of the show, his brother was in fact the guitar player pretending to be our country music singer. We thank him for his splendid efforts. I hope he had a good time. Spaghetti, did he have a good time?
He had an absolute blast. Loved the city, loved doing that. He said, like, I would have been sitting by myself watching the draft. Instead, he was next to these players. Like, he's actually a big Jets fan. So to meet Quinnen Williams, who he's loved because he loves college.
How's that happen?
Oh, he was great.
The story
Quinnen
is that
Williams
we,
was another great guy.
I was lucky. My dad, years and years and years ago, had Jets and Giants season tickets, got rid of the Giants because you just can't move up in the seats. This is like in the 80s. So he kept the Jets ones forever. So we would go to Jets games all the time. So I root for the Jets as well. But I've always, my dad's a Giants fan. My dad's an LT fan. So I was always Giants. My brother, for some reason, fell in love with Nick Mangold because he played center for Marist. And he always loved Nick Mangold, so he's a Jets guy. And like Quinnen Williams is like, he loved him, so seeing all those guys up close, it
good
was
stuff.
Awesome for him. Yeah.
Who would have thought what's your brother's name?
James.
Who would have thought James ahead of the old Eddie here in terms of what team you should be rooting
they're
for in New York?
They're gonna be better. Yeah.
That was a good song that we cooked up for Quinnen Williams. All off the cuff, you know? I'm like a rapper, kind of. In
little
a way.
Bit. A freestyling action, huh?
In a way. By the way, him with Leonard Williams, again, I do not think that. All right, listen, let's cut to the chase. The Patriots obviously win the Super Bowl once again, especially now the rumors are out there. Josh Gordon's on his way back. K'Neil Harry is.
N'Keal. And apostrophe.
N'Keal
Harry.
In 4 months, I haven't gotten his name
right. It's a tough one. It's N apostrophe. It's N'Keal Harry.
N'Keal Harry.
There we go.
We did it. Sony Michelle.
I love that draft, by the way. Love their draft.
Chase
love
Winovich.
Juwan Williams.
Do you know I'm related to him, Chase Winovich?
Are you really?
On Mo Damashek's side of the family, yeah.
Perfect fit.
I know.
Guy is a perfect. Love Damian Harris is a thumper. Man, do I like that draft. I really do.
A lot of people thought that a lot of people in Pittsburgh were rooting hard to see Winovich get there. They would have loved to see him on the other side from T.J. Watt.
To me, the idea that you got Devin Bush is so, you know, we talked about this when I came back from that Sunday nighter when the Chargers made history knocking off the Steelers for the first time when they had a 16-point or more advantage in the second half, not at Heinz Field in the city of Pittsburgh. So coming off of that victory.
Congratulations.
Yeah, you're welcome.
On that.
Yeah, I did a lot. although I did get to walk through
the lobby
all the legends were congregated in my Charger gear after that remarkable come. And I see Franco Harris and Kiesel and all these guys just looking at me and Shannon, our girl on the sidelines there. And they're just shaking their head. And I'm like, sorry, I got to get to the bus. I mean, I didn't mean to wear this polo in the middle of your party here. They've invited you back for.
We've moved on the banks
but
of the
no, this
Three
is what
Rivers
I'm saying.
From that wreck.
This is what
money?
I'm getting to and why I acknowledge it, because when you look at that defense, specifically up front, with Hayward and Hargrave and Tuitt and Dupree and Watt to just bloop, drop Bush right in the middle there, to have that speed and to try, you know, obviously horrible what happened to Ryan Shazier, and we love that comeback, and hopefully he comes all the way back, but to be able to put him in there, man, that is just the piece that you talk about, the Jenga piece, right? That's what they needed. That's what that defense needed.
They're going to have to catch some breaks from the football gods, Pittsburgh, this year, because they do not have depth. They have Alu to back up that top three, like you say, which each of those three individual pieces dominant in the second half
so
of
good.
Last season. And with Alu, they have enough of a rotation there. Would have loved to see a little more depth. You can't fill every need when you're not going into the season, going into the draft super deep. As Pittsburgh is it a couple things have to, you know, there were some corners out there that were interesting.
Just think about what
once they moved up to get Bush as you're watching the second round.
Remember what happened in that game in that second half? They kept having to put a linebacker on Keenan, and they had no one with speed, and it was just bonk, bonk, bonk all the way down the
field.
Pick
it on LJ Ford.
Nothing they could do about it. And to be able to put someone there with speed to help figure out the middle of that field, I think, is exactly what they need.
I did not see a ton of Big 12 action this past season, so I'll own it. I'll wear it. And that said, I did see enough of Justice Hill that I was drooling. I thought, oh, if the Steelers could land that guy, they do still wind up with Snell, which is good because he's going
to
wear 26.
At least he's in the division. And get to see him in the division.
And but he also gets to, as I kept calling for, Marquise Brown to take over 84. Instead, Snell, instead of Bell, both 26. A lot of people can modify their Steelers jerseys
big win
doing
there.
That. I do. So you like Devin Bush.
I do.
Yeah. To your point about Shazier, there is, as I said to him the night of the draft, there is something poignant about Michigan, Ohio State basically going to be coaching up the Michigan kid to fill his spot.
Right.
You know,
yep.
But Shazier just named, just won the Rooney Award for the guy who seems to fit into. I forget the description of what goes into it, but basically the man who personifies Pittsburgh best. Shazier got that, so everybody still rooting for him, and I do think he'll have an impact. If nothing else, then with Devin Bush, another bright guy running that defense as soon as this season kicks off. The Ravens, as far as they go. They're kind of interesting now. I was done with them. I said it's a Browns v. Steelers 2019, and now the Ravens feel kind of back in it a little.
I mean, adding Mark Ingram, you know, as opposed to if you're going to run the heck out of the ball, okay, Gus Edwards, he's a load, and, you know, and then, okay, well, here comes Kenneth Dixon, now he's a load, and, you know, to be able to put Ingram in there, who's a legitimate three-down back. I mean, the only reason why he wasn't as much of a three-down back is because Alvin Kamara's there in New Orleans, so, of course, he's better pass catcher, has more speed, but Ingram's plenty good enough to stay on the field. And then you mentioned Justice Hill. I mean, here's a game breaker that can come in and do some things. They keep Edwards, so you still get that heavy hitter between the tackles. They needed a pass catcher. And, I mean, just do yourselves a favor.
I just think, if nothing else, how much can you focus on anybody? And a guy who can run past you like that, he is going.
It's cartoon speed. Just right. Go back and watch Marquise Brown highlights from Oklahoma, and it is cartoon level. It's the way he pulls away from dudes on these quick slants, and he's just gone. It's like, how is someone that much faster on a field than everybody else when you see the distance he'll create between those quick hitters in the end zone?
And basically, defensively, you're going to have to pack it in to bang Lamar and all those running backs. So Marquise Brown should be running free quite a bit in 2019. Yeah, Browns, I'll say you about that team, Maurice. Maria.
That's all right.
Maurice, money.
I spent some time with Maurice over the weekend covering the draft.
You guys are basically the same human
being. We are, very much so. Same accomplishments, especially on the football field. It's hard not to like them, right? I mean, just even without the draft. You know, the draft was interesting, obviously, with Greedy and Mac Wilson, two guys that, you know, at one point were projected to not only go in the first round, but were projected at the top of their grouping, their position groupings. For whatever reason, Mac Wilson slipped. I don't know if it was the Clemson tape or if just his production peeled off a little bit toward the end of the year. And I also think there might be a little bit of concern about Alabama players when they start getting dinged up, that they really work them. I mean, Nick, look, there's a reason why they're so dominant. I think they get practiced and pushed harder than any other team, any other school in college football. And I think that wears on them. And that's why a lot of these guys end up getting hurt early in their careers and often in their careers.
So, oh, that's an interesting thought.
So I think that's part of it too.
I did talk with, we had a splendid time in Nashville, and we spent some time at Zaxby's working the drive-through with Rashawn Evans.
Another
spaghetti.
Alabama
I mean,
backer.
what a delight he was, right? I mean, a rare level of humor and just easygoing fella, and we were talking about Quinnen and everybody else. He was pining for him to fall, which we knew he wouldn't. But
he's an all-time DDF, since I've been here, DDFP guest. I mean, he was super great. And then a couple of days later, having Devin White as well, we got lucky too. Like all-time,
Devin White was your favorite guy
at the draft.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think anything was close. He was super funny. He took
Christian
over
Wilkins
show.
Was pretty good.
Christian Wilkins really good. Yeah,
moments after he almost killed the commissioner of the NFL. Almost
tried
killed
to.
Him.
Yeah, he tried to.
Yeah, I mean,
it was a good dodge. It was a good dodge.
But just back to it quickly, spaghetti. Yeah, I mean, money. You should have seen this scene. So I started to cover this earlier. Spaghetti's brother James is standing there with a guitar, dressed up like he's a country singer, off in the corner. Spaghetti is producing the DDFP. We're in the moment. These fancy pants are rolling through fast and furious. Spaghetti consumed. Who are the Giants going to get? Who are the Giants going to get?
He's distracted the whole time, isn't he?
He was just watching the cell phone. What are they going to do? What are they going to do?
Do you guys have a live feed of it where you're at?
We had a live feed.
Yeah, it was
DirecTV we had, so it was a bit delayed. Obviously, we're there, but we could hear Roger Goodell say the name. So I'm checking Twitter, and usually like beat writers will break it ahead of time. I couldn't find it. No one knew. And I'm like, well, Josh Allen's there. They got to take Josh Allen. It should be so simple. Like, take Josh Allen.
And then you hear Spaghetti say, I just heard quarterback. I just heard him say quarterback. I think it's going to be Daniel Jones. No, it can't be Daniel Jones. James, he just said quarterback. And then finally the feed catches up with us and he says Daniel Jones. Despondent doesn't do it justice. I mean, it was something to see. And then 20 minutes later, in walks Daniel Jones.
To do his interview with the DDFP.
Walks into the room, and I insisted that Spaghetti greet him. You know, man to
as
man.
You should have.
Yeah, they had the glad hand, right?
I met him actually at the combine too, and he was super nice there.
But he was delightful.
And I saw him again. I was like, you know, congratulations, like big Giants fan, like good luck this year. And he was could not be nicer. And I said, I feel bad for him because he's getting slammed by everyone,
destroyed.
So it's like I'm rooting for him. I hope he does well. Would I have made the pick? No. I think if you have a guy who
he's self interviewing,
no.
When he's self interviewing, right. You know, there's trouble.
I mean, I believe in like the BPA mentality, and then you have Josh Allen who people. He could have went as high as maybe 2 in this draft. He's fallen there. He's there at 6. You know, they get a steal at 7, the Jaguars, by taking him. It's like you take him there, like Money said, he probably could have been there at 17.
Just imagine if you had taken Darnold with number 2. And there's Josh Jacobs waiting for you at 17. Josh Allen at 7. Boy, does it all lay out perfectly, Eddie.
I don't know.
Perfectly.
I still think Saquon's still better than everyone. So
what?
Saquon plus Daniel Jones.
But listen,
it's not Saquon's better than everyone. It's you now have Saquon and Daniel Jones.
I need
Jones.
To see Darnold have a really good season for me to feel bad about that because he still throws a lot of picks, and the Jets don't have
Again,
a ton of weapons yet.
I think some of your cynicism comes from the aforementioned Maurice. Maurice Jones-Drew points out, hey, a guy who throws picks in high school and in college doesn't break that habit once he gets to the pros. Perhaps. He's got the gunslinger to him, but is everybody wrong? Is the consensus scouting community that the best QB available in 2018 was Sam Darnold? Are they wrong? Maybe people slept on Baker for some cockiness issues or whatever. They were worried about what kind of attitude he was going to have. But the consensus in terms of talent was that Sam Darnold was the guy in a talented group of QBs last year. If he merely rises with Adam Gase, which he should. He should be better with Adam Gase. And I keep saying I like Jameson Crowder. Now he's got 26 back there behind him. I think at least you got to like Leonard Williams lining up to Quinnen Williams. Quinnen Williams declared by everybody this year as the safest pick. He has the highest floor.
He
right?
and Devin White were the two you heard.
Like you can't miss.
Quinnen
Williams can only be so bad. Mm-hmm. So I think they're an interesting team. And here's another one. I don't know if Josh Allen is good, the QB Josh Allen, but if he is good, the Bills should be kind of good too.
Love their draft. Absolutely loved it. I mean, the interesting thing about Josh Allen last year was just I don't think people realize how big that dude is, how big and strong. It's like, oh, yeah, the guy's just running around out there. Yeah, do you have any idea what it's like when that dude is running at you and you're a defensive back or you're a smaller linebacker and he's 6'6" and 245 pounds and he can move and has a little wiggle to him?
That's a lot of Cam Newton to that.
Right. That's what people don't realize. That is a legitimate dual threat.
That's right.
And he can just huck the ball down the field if you can get a receiver, like you said, that can just crawl under it. You know, good luck. Hey, just run that way as fast as you can. Don't worry about it. You're not going to outrun the pass. Just try to catch up and get underneath the thing. I mean, that is, you know, it's raw. It's going to take a minute, but I'm with you. I am anxious to see how that division plays out now with Darnold and all those weapons and Josh Allen in his second year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
But the Patriots are, I think we can agree, even without Gronk, are going to be scary once again, right? Or do you feel like...
Oh, yeah. No question. I thought they had the best draft. I thought they had the best draft of any team. Just the way N'Keal Harry, I already mentioned Juwan Williams, Chase Winovich, Damian Harris. I mean, there's their first four picks. And it's interesting that they took Jared Stidham, which was just kind of the scuttlebutt at the combine, right? It's like, this is your New England quarterback. This guy, Jared Stidham, you know, transfers into a system that doesn't fit him with Gus Malzahn. A little bit of inconsistency there. But when you get him out of all that, and, you know, football is very much as much about circumstance as anything in the world. Forget sports. Who's your coach? Do you have a coordinator that knows how to call plays? Who's around you? Do you have an offensive line? What division do you play in? You get all that going in the right direction. And Stidham, I heard DJ say it, who did a bang-up job covering the draft. He said, when these guys were all standing around, before we knew who was who and what was what, Stidham threw the best ball. You walked out of those guys throwing it around in shorts, and you're like, that's your guy right there. Look at that. Look at that motion. Look at how compact. Look at the way the ball comes out. Look at how he throws it. And I think there's something to that. So I'm with you on New England. I think they are a cut above in that division yet again.
Yeah, I guess so. I do think the Jets, though, loom as an interesting. Like I say, the Bills, too. The most interesting QB battle is not in South Beach this year. It would be crazy if they don't go, as far as I'm concerned, with Josh Rosen. And all, I mean, this nonsense that Gettleman is floating. Maybe we'll follow the Packers, Favre Rodgers model. It's 2019, bub. You're not the Packers either. If things break just right with Eli, you could have won the division this year. Now I it feels like a longer shot. The most interesting QB battle is a mile high this year, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, go Flacco. What's the point of going Flacco?
Sorry about that. I think Flacco is the guy because I do think Drew Lock would benefit from sitting a year, even though he had all those starts, most starts of any quarterback that was drafted, definitely had the experience. But I do think there is pressure on John Elway to win immediately. And I think that's going to be really hard to do in that division with a rookie who's just trying to figure it out. When you have to go up against that front in Kansas City with Chris Long and Frank Clark, and now you got Tyrann Mathieu back there, when you have to go against the Chargers and Bosa and Ingram and Derwin James, and now you got Adderley back there ball hawking as a rookie, I think that's tough. I think that's because you can't. I don't think Elway can afford to have Drew Lock be viewed as anything but a savior. And to me, that means you got to start out with Flacco and hope that that works out, you know. And
I bet you by midseason at the
league, I think that's what I'm saying. I think that would be the case, is that Flacco would have Flacco's going to start. I mean, it's not going to be Lock. He's definitely going to start. And, you know, Elway will hope that he can put some stuff together and maybe get a little fire. I mean, that's kind of what you heard in Baltimore, right? Is that, you know, maybe Flacco just, he got the big contract and he just took the foot off the gas a little bit.
Are you worried? And then we're going to move on, I think, unless there are other teams that you guys want to jump in on here. I want to round it out with your Chargers, Matt Money Smith, because once again, we talked about it going into last year's draft, and we talked about going into the season. We talked about going into the playoffs. The most talented team is the Chargers, it seems. And it seems like that they remain that post-draft, the most talented team. The saddest irony would be is if Phil Rivers is the weak link. Any indication that there's any concern as far as that goes? Because now Derwin James, you said, if they could fix that safety spot, and then Derwin James is
just
everything that you anticipated. Now you have speed, which should liberate Derwin James even a little bit more. Right. I mean, there's no
to have Adderley fall to them at number 60 was that's because he had a first round grade on a lot of scouts boards. We were told at the combine, and that's kind of what I was thinking. All right. Well, if they let a die go, they're not going to sign any of these safeties. There's so many of them out there in free agency. That's probably what they're looking at, is there's a lot of guys, Taylor Rapp, Nasir Adderley, all these guys that they just figure this is who we're going to get. And because we have that pass rush, we got Derwin, we've got Casey Hayward on one side. They're going to be able to manage back there, especially considering they had Adai. He's a great story, undrafted free agent, busted his butt, never complained once about playing out of position. He's a strong, he's got no business playing free. He got burned at least once, most times, four or five times a game. I mean, the Chiefs just destroyed him the last 2 years with those just kind of inside crosser routes that he's got to pick up, and he's three, four steps behind. That's not going to happen with Adderley. So that really helps that defense out and fixes a huge issue that they had all season. To the Rivers point, to me, he covered up so much. If it weren't for Phillip Rivers last year, that team might have been
You did four wins. You did sing that song.
That, yeah, that O line, the interior of the O line was not good. It was leaky with Feeney and Schofield at the guards. Forrest Lamp will be back this year. I'm anxious to see what the post, I don't know what the compensation date is. I think it's May 9th, maybe, is the free agency date to kind of keep an eye on when the compensation picks come into play. I wouldn't be surprised if you see them add another guard or maybe even a right tackle to help Sam Tevi out a little bit as well. But that's the one thing I would circle. Like, hey, if they're going to do it, they're going to have to fix a little bit of that front five ahead of Rivers. But with Hunter Henry back now in full health, with Mike Williams, you know, 1 year, another year removed from the neck.
Now?
I think
isn't
so.
Mike Williams going to be a star by the end of
especially when you have Hunter Henry there as a threat. You know, you were getting a lot of doubles. You know, nobody doubles Keenan because he's just such a tactician and he'll just break ankles all over the place. So that's where a lot of the doubles went, was to the other side of Mike Williams.
I think the Chiefs, we got to wait and see what happens with Tyreek Hill. We'll see how that all plays out, but I think they'll be slightly diminished from the powerhouse they were last year. The Patriots always loom. Everybody's kissed the Browns into the title game. It seems like I'm jumping to it here. We're not even
what do we got?
We're not close to Memorial Day. I got the Colts and Chargers playing in your AFC title game.
I mean, they were both in the Final Four. I thought that was going to be the AFC championship game last year. And what happened? Colts got kicked around by the Chiefs pretty darn good. Andrew Luck had his worst game of the season. And obviously, we know how things started for the Chargers, 28-7 in New England, where they just dumped it to James White and they could not adjust. And granted, a lot of that was depleted ranks. You know, you had no linebackers.
But still a bizarre game.
It really was. They finally made their adjustments at half and, you know, were able to slow them down a little bit. You don't know how much of that was, you know, by design. And they weren't going after them as hard and just playing the clock a little bit more. But, I mean, look, they like you said, I don't think it's outrageous. Like I said, they were both in the divisional round. They each won a playoff game last year. So to say they take the next step, sure, why not?
Money, who is Spaghetti? You love Nashville, right?
I did.
The
but is that we went to Austin. I think Austin's better. Oh. I think Austin's a better city.
Where does Nashville rank for
love
you
it.
Among the
one
football
of my, yeah, one of my favorites.
Cities?
I'll be going there again this year. It'll be my first time in a while. I have not been to Nashville since way back in my record business days. I only went to Memphis during my play-by-play gig to call a Memphis State Gonzaga game, as a matter of fact, in Memphis. But it's been a while. I love it. Like I said, it's been a bit, but love Broadway. Just kind of love the vibe there. Love the history of country music. Obviously, where the Grand Ole Opry is. I love old country. Some of my favorite stuff. I hate new country. Despise it. Wish it would die in a fire.
Sean Evans had a lot of range with that. I said, Johnny Cash or Shania Twain, which are you more of? And he's like, oh, that's a tough call. I said, is a human being capable
really
of
not.
That? Can you? Is that
really not?
Is that a thing that you can like both of those? Are you allowed to?
Really not
that guy.
Not a tough call. Listen to some Willie. Listen to some Waylon. Mm-hmm. Listen to like you said. Listen to some good old Johnny Cash. And I love it. Love.
I like I finally had some hot chicken. Mm-hmm. Someday I'm going to put together my full rankings of all the region of the food,
the specialties
associated. As I've said many times before, you'd be hard pressed to ever beat Cincinnati chili as the worst.
It's the worst. There's nothing worse.
I don't get why. Skyline
I don't care if it's Gold Star or Skyline. They're both garbage.
What is, I don't understand the soupy, what are you saying?
You put it on the noodles.
No, I wrote it down to make sure that we get to that food regional list.
Oh, you did write it down. I didn't know.
That's what's so funny about it is.
I want to do it.
After I did it the first time, they were like, no, you don't understand. It's not like chili. You don't eat it in a bowl. You put it on noodles. I was like, oh, okay.
And the cheese isn't like melted or
anything.
Put it
on the noodles then. And I ate it and I was like, this is terrible. I don't get it.
It looks like something if you opened a can of chili in your home and heated it up in the microwave and then sprinkled some cheese out of the cheese bin or something. Like, that's it? This is your city special? I've never had toasted ravioli.
It's pretty good.
Is it?
It's pretty good.
It doesn't sound that good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I don't like St. Louis, and I'll give them that. Toasted
cheese
ravioli.
Pretty darn good. All right, we'll do our full rank. Let's not jump into it. This is too important.
What's Pittsburgh, by the way?
Well, Pittsburgh's got Primanthes.
So it would be that particular sandwich, that Primanthes sandwich.
They call that Pittsburgh style. Okay. They put the fries, in it. Gotcha. And everything.
I had one of those in Indianapolis, actually. There's a Primanthes Brothers.
Yeah, there's Primanthes there. Exactly.
It was good.
I loved it. When I was out there for that Sunday nighter. So how about this? The Steelers are up 16 in the second half, right? Never in the history of the city, not just Heinz Field, but in the history of Pittsburgh football.
It's the only time it ever happened, huh?
Did a team overcome a 16-point deficit. So when I was there for that, I went to Primanthes Brothers before that.
I love. By the way, the pivotal play of that game, as you'll recall, was with a minute and a half left in the third. Joe Hayden has the interception in the end zone.
Gets
and
destroyed
Sean
by his own
Davis
man.
Inexplicably trucks him, and the ball flies out, and Keenan Allen catches
touchdown.
It. And when Joe Hayden sat where you're sitting about a month ago, his response was, "He didn't. You know, I asked. He did not mean any harm by that."
Oh, he didn't. You mean he didn't do it intentionally?
He didn't mean any harm by that.
So you're lucky I wasn't here. Oh, yes, he did, Joe. I saw
it
on the replay.
He caused harm.
I saw it on the replay. He definitely hit you with intent.
Anyway, please proceed. I'm sorry.
I don't remember. Oh, I said I had that Primanthes Brothers sandwich that day, and it's delicious. It's a delicious sandwich.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They got cheese steaks, fish tacos, I guess, would be. What would be L.A.? Burrito?
That's a taco, maybe.
Well, I don't
taco
know. I mean, it is the home of the French dip if you go to Philippe's. I mean, it was invented here, and it's a delicious sandwich.
What's
that
New
double
York?
Dip.
Wieners?
Nah,
a pizza?
Probably
a slice?
Pizza or bagels, maybe.
And so then what happens sandwich. When you get to Chicago? Do you do a hot dog or do you do a deep dish?
I think deep dish, right? You can't do your region. You
they're
can't
the only
your,
ones that have the deep dish. So
you
I
can't
guess
do
you
your
go.
Local jive either, spaghetti of like, I know, but real New Yorkers know about. No, what's perceived to be
pizza?
Right.
I think it's just pizza. I'd be fine with that.
Because
I'd be fine if you did pizza for both Chicago and New York.
Let's do that the next time because Handsome is well-traveled too. Let's have Handsome here. And actually, let's do it as a food block. Yeah. Let's get one of our esteemed food blockers here, whether it's Jeff Schwartz, Ross Tucker. Sure. Or Sean O'Hare, or maybe a gaggle
of
Baldy.
Ross and myself had a lot of the Nashville brisket that day.
Oh, the one day when
that's
we talked
some
good
tricky,
barbecue.
Though, but
really good.
The barbecue is going to be
interesting
because of all the South. It's like we have to distinguish like which states get which barbecue type because they all kind of share just barbecue overall.
I don't know. To me, it's brisket. You know, you pit your brisket against their brisket and let's go. It's just like pizza.
We can do that.
Hey, let's take Chicago's best against New York's best. Come
on.
Let's go. Bring it.
KC barbecue. We have to figure out the full list and then we shall attack.
I will say my number one overall will not be beat is the Austin brisket. The barbecue in Texas was
all right. You're talking, but if we keep it to football America, if we keep
right,
it to
Austin is not part of this.
Football America, Austin is out.
Oh, it's football. This is the
spaghetti. We're not eating Damage it, actually.
Football program.
We understand that we're not going to have a buffet of all these options anyway for
you. Hashing it out here.
Noted.
Spaghetti. One half of the thick cast.
Right.
He's disappointed. Oh, yeah. I'll just turn it over to you and your partner there, Handsome Hank. Maybe you guys can just steer that whole conversation. Money and I will just be around.
Sure.
To listen to you two fats talk about things. All right. Fats. Now let's talk about Game of Thrones a little bit, shall we? What did you think, Matt Money Smith, of the most hyped? Is that the most hype since JR got shot on Dallas? Is that more hyped than the
maybe Seinfeld finale?
Okay. Yeah, that would be up there. How did it hit your
I enjoyed
soul?
It.
Did you?
I did. I enjoyed it. I there were a couple moments that I thought the Arya fight scenes were awesome. I really dug them. I was cracking up. What's the little girl's name? The annoying little girl who ran the you know, her own little kingdom thing.
Lyanna Mormont.
Yeah. There was something about her getting picked up by that giant and just going, meh,
it's the funniest
stabbing
thing.
It in the eye, and all of a sudden it collapses. That was kind of funny to me and awkward. The dragon scenes were not great as far as I was concerned, but whatever. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat. It was intense.
The first 15 minutes.
It was great.
Spellbinding.
Yes, I'm with you.
If you've ever been in the snow, if you've ever lived anywhere where it gets wintry, at night, that stillness was great. And when they're all lined up and the imminent doom and all that kind of stuff, and you can't see them, but you know they're in
the
darkness
flaming swords
there.
And then they're gone and you're like, oh, boy.
Well, then it was so creepy when the witch comes riding out. What gives? What malintent does she have? None, in fact. She wants to light those things up. That was great. And the visual of them riding off into darkness and then watching them extinguish quickly was ominous and scary and everything else.
Yeah.
Why weren't they out torture? I mean, I know everybody's point. What were Jon Snow and Dany doing up on Mount Pius there? Get on your dragons and go torch them dead
That's
things.
What I couldn't figure out either. Well, I know the clouds came in and they couldn't see and they're bonking into one another and they're trying to find the Night King to roast him up. And that's kind of their goal. Forget the zombies. You kill the Night King, you kill them all.
Exactly.
So that's kind of what their mission was. I didn't like the whole... And it was just like we saw that in World War Z, you know, in that film where the zombies are all piling on each other to climb that wall. And I was like, no, I've seen this.
I declared the zombies are done. We now need a generation of space from zombies. No, if you are a movie or TV maker, leave the zombies out for like 8 to 12 years. We can't come back to them. It's been done now. We've seen every variation of the undead and how scary they are. And it's over with now.
I'm
right?
with you. It was so similar to that iconic scene in that not iconic film.
Other complaints. I will say that while it started, it always gets bogged down. And by the way, new Adam Carolla noise on the Adam Carolla show on Good Sports. We talk about these tropes that you see in movies all the time. And it always bogs down when you bring in the supernatural. How then do you keep it consistent? These people, they start out, they are basically, as you describe, sort of a human tidal wave or a formerly human tidal wave, just washing over waves and waves of the good guys. And then at some point, once they get up over the wall, it's like, well, you know, they're going to kill everybody. There's no stopping them. They're just
they're already dead.
Then Jamie, Brienne, Fat Samwell, and Tormund, the four of them, for an hour of the battle, for an hour, like in the exact same spots, respectively. And they're like surrounded by a dozen or so of these undead, and they're just like still fighting them. Like, are they unstoppable, or did they get tired?
I think what they're going for is that, well, one, because these whites, they're not exactly zombies, they're whites. They do use weapons to fight, and they're trying to show that besides Sam, those are all elite fighters. They're the best of the best.
It went on for too long. They weren't out there actively doing it. They just were staying at home waiting for them to come at them. And is Sam, what's Sam? I thought he was a wimpus. And now he was laying on the undead with his two little knives for like an hour, just like fending them off, weeping. You know, are these the all-time marauders, or are they mannequins that Samwell could just push over at a whim?
There's still four-ish hours of show left. They're going to have big plot points coming up. That's why they kept them alive. There's reasons why they're still there. There's going to be something coming to a head with Jamie and Brienne. I think Sam's going to be in a position of power when it's all said and done. So there's a reason why these guys are still alive. That's my take on that.
I'm just telling you what the episode, how I felt about the episode. And the whole thing about the winter is coming. So for a decade of my life, I'm just worried I'm going to get lost again. And I mean lost as in the TV show. I better not get lost it again, because I devoted way too much of my life to watching Lost to get that rubbish ending. And I'm not going to stand for it this time around.
You're going to get a rubbish ending.
I better not get one.
It's inevitable that you're going to get a rubbish ending.
All I hear about is winter. Oh, it's coming. It's coming. It came. It blew in. And then the dumb Night King stands over Bran, who doesn't even have his eyeballs in. And he hovers over him for an eternity. And then Arya Stark swoops in from nowhere. No one got in his way.
She sneak by all the stormtroopers, but the Emperor's Guard as well. Like, unnoticed. She can't move in the library, right? She can't move an inch, or else they're going to be able to descend upon her and rip her to shreds.
Right.
Yet here's your elite fighting force that's behind you, Night King, and you can't hear her speak up.
And he's got those other guys. They all other than the Night King, all the bosses.
That's what I mean.
The undead are
the White Walkers. They all have their long hair, their long white hair. Not one of them lifted a finger the whole fight.
Because
they just hung around.
She became one of them. She was a faceless man, and that's
right.
What,
she was
that's
the she is the
point.
Most elite of all the fighters in Game of Thrones. Nobody tops Arya. She
well, why
is the
didn't
best
we see
best.
That? I would have liked to have if that's
seen her maneuver and how she
if
got in
there. If
they
would have shown
you.
Her putting the face on, is that what you're saying, Spaghetti?
Think that's what Melisandre told her when she said the brown eyes, green eyes, blue eyes thing. The blue eyes are meant for the White Walker. She realized it. She goes, oh yeah, I'm trained in this, and then she became one of the White Walkers.
Why didn't we see that? Why did we have to?
Oh,
see
I didn't
Fat
think that
Sam
meant she was
going
to become one of them. I thought it meant she was going to kill kill one of them. She said, you will close those with brown eyes, green eyes, and blue eyes. You will close those eyes forever, meaning you're going to be the one that kills the
blue-eyed
king.
Yeah, and there's a scene that people are hinting at. Like, there's like a, like when the wind blows, you see like one of the White Walkers like turn and look or something like that. And that's like indicating that she ended up becoming right over in like that circle by the Weirwood tree. And she became one of them.
I'm fine with that. I mean, she had to wear it for like 5 seasons. Just wear it. I mean, freaking wear it.
I liked her championship, and I think that's what she gets. She gets MVP of the big fight, obviously. But and by the way, that move when she drops the knife and then in one fell swoop chops you.
Which she did before. It was an episode earlier. She trained with Brienne. They were outside battling, and Brienne's one of the best warriors in the whole show, and Arya made quick work of her with that move.
All right. I don't know. And I also don't care for, I don't know if you call it humanizing or whatever, adding a sense of humor to the Night King. What's he grinning for?
The smirk.
I didn't need the smirk. You're a relentless, soulless machine. Don't be grinning and everything.
And I was just kind of stuck on, is it hair? Is that like an ice crown?
Yeah.
Is it like his head? And he's kind of like part reptile. Like, what is that?
He was a man. The top?
Because it almost looked like kind of like Dan Helly hair. You know, it was like that very carefully positioned, messed up look, you know, but you know, it's not just messed up. There's, you know, it's congruous.
Are you saying the Night King is metrosexual?
I'm just saying, I didn't know what it was. Like, no, it was kind of like, is it a nice crown? Is that just his head?
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, my radio partner Petros brought up a great point. He's like, does he have junk? You know, because he's wearing pants. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like he does, you know. And then I weighed in. I said, well, he doesn't have to procreate. He just raises the dead. Those are his children. So I don't know. Does he got anything down there?
He was a guy. He was a Stark. Years and years.
He was a Stark.
Yeah, he was created by the Children of the Forest. So he's just like a magic Stark, basically.
Seems like if we're willing to accept any of this, we have to accept it all. It's not a period piece, my man. It is not the medieval times.
Greyjoy just throws himself away. That's what he did. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah. That was Bran, the suicide mission.
Well, eyes rolled back. I don't understand what Bran's doing the whole time either. I don't know what he's up.
It's going
to
be important.
Don't tell me to just wait. Why are you the great defender of George R.R. Martin all the time?
I have to go now. Great acting, Bran. It's like that.
You're
understand.
A good man, Bran. You're a good man. And then I'm going to sit here while in my chair while all of you guys do the fighting. I don't understand what that was about.
Well, he suckered him in. He's the guy.
Bran,
he can see
that.
The future, yeah. Right? He knew Arya was going to come and kill the guy, and he was going to sucker him in.
Oh, he did?
Yes. Yeah.
He knew Theon was going to... That's why he said, you're a good man. He knew he was going to sacrifice himself.
All right.
That was all
pretty quiet. Don't know how it all winds up.
Can I ask one more question that we were working through yesterday together? Because we're not... I mean, you're an expert, Eddie. At least I think you are. People on Twitter don't seem to think you are, but I do.
No, I'm getting slammed.
So we know that Theon, nothing.
No.
But now Varys and Grey Worm, they got half of it, and they don't have the other half? Or are they missing it all, too?
Varys is, I think,
what do you mean the other
just
half?
Just a eunuch? Is he just a eunuch?
He's a eunuch.
Or is it all gone? Because remember, Theon, it's all gone. It was all sent back in that box to his sister or something like that.
Right, right.
So, but Grey Worm and Varys, they're just eunuchs, right?
If they were part of Football America and we were talking about the town's different foods, wieners would definitely
be
Westeros.
That's what I'm wondering.
Or Winterfell's submission. Or the Iron Island. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure there's a scene where Tyrion makes fun of
him. It's a plague in Westeros.
For it all being gone.
I'm pretty sure Tyrion does. Either the books or in the show.
That's what I'm not sure of.
I think he makes fun of him.
I can't help but think about it every time they come on the screen. That's why I just like, well.
He's the guy, too.
Is it the... What is it? Hey. Right. I don't know. It's very distracting.
I think he's going to be a player in the last three episodes as well. Varys.
Who?
Varys. Because he hasn't done anything this season. So
I love that guy.
I think there's a lot left to get to worry about.
I was sad to see Barrett go. He has, as we've said before.
Who's that?
Flaming Sword.
Love that dude.
Guy. Yeah.
You knew he was going. Because no major characters went. It was just like all those secondary characters.
I floated that out. I said, let's pick the five people who are going to survive because I thought it was going to be much more of a bloodbath in it. It's got a little bit of a weird hint to it now of all of a sudden like, oh my God, they just chopped off Ned Stark's head and all those sorts of incidents. Wait, they just took the wiener of Theon Greyjoy right there? Now
Rob
everybody
Stark,
who's
the
worth,
mom, all dead.
But now everybody survives.
I don't like it.
Now we got to see. I don't mean to be a jerk or whatever, if it gives you pleasure or whatever, but, you know, Brienne and Tormund, okay, great. Now they're in love. But it would have been better if one of them had turned into a White Walker and then they had to kill the other one, you know? Now they're in love. Now Tormund has to kill Brienne as a White Walker. Now that would have been juicy.
They should have killed Daenerys. That's who should have died.
I was sure she was dead. I thought that was it, and they were.
That would have been the great wrinkle.
I think so too.
They should have killed somebody.
That would have been the great wrinkle.
But they have to set up for the Jon versus Danny feud, which is going to happen soon. So
as Big Cat pointed out as well, the one thing that's good about it is at least now we're done with the supernatural, right?
We can get back to dudes fighting dudes.
It was always a subplot. It never was the main story. People like to think that it never was.
People like to think that. The promotion was winter's coming, The bad dragon burned the wall down. What are you talking about?
It's still a subplot. There's no Night King in the book.
He's dead. The bad dragon is dead now.
Yes.
And the two are still alive?
Yeah, they showed it.
I thought one of them was killed.
They're both in the preview. They both live. I think John's flew away and Danny's came back. It was just injured. They both were injured.
That's the case, and then now it's anticlimactic. If they're both alive and good fighters still, now I hope Jon Snow learned enough from the battle that he could say, like, well, okay, now I realize we shouldn't have sent away the Dothraki and let them all die while we had these two fire-breathing dragons here that could have erased all the undead. But now can't they just go get Cersei? Who cares about the mountain? We have two dragons.
It's not going to happen like that. Don't forget Bronn's coming up north with the crossbow. He might take out a dragon. Jon and Danny might fight before they get to Cersei. They're still in Winterfell.
They got that big spear thing.
There's a lot that's going to go on. Like I said, there's still a four-ish hours of time.
You're not smart because you say things are going to happen. That's not an observation.
My point is that
I'm not going to listen to you brag. I told you things were going to happen. Yeah, I guess things would happen.
Yet. No one does. I don't either. But I'm saying, like, I'm not going to harshly judge this episode until it's all done. And
I thought it was great. It's just like I say, it was like, all right, these things that you always get to that, whether it's the Avengers movies or the Justice League or anything else, when you introduce these supernatural kind of forces, like at some point they have to regress in terms of fighting or else your heroes wouldn't be able to defeat them all. And that's what happened in this one. At some point, Jaime Lannister took up a spot against a wall and did not move from that wall for an hour of the fight. And you just kept thinking like, well, eventually he's going to have to die, right? Nope. No, he's fine with his opposite hand. And somebody else made a good point, and then we'll finish it. Why not instead of the gold hand, why not like a hook like Captain Hook or something, a weapon, you know, a saw.
Hand doesn't move. Or especially if it was like a fist.
Yeah. Something like,
right?
Like an axe on the other hand. Like, see, it's the sword in the one hand and then like an axe in the other. Now you're cooking with gas.
At least they should have, like, you know, duct tape some dragon glass onto it or something.
Yeah, right.
You know, instead it's just a waste. I'm with you.
By the way, you didn't get, not enough people got burned by the fact that the undead had holes all in their bodies and like you go to get them like, oh, my sword went right through, you know, because you're
decomposed.
Right. All you are is just, you're literally just bones, you know, and my sword can't kill you. I don't know. I give it a mixed review. I give it a mixed review overall. Out of Seven Kingdoms, I give it 4.5.
Sounds about right.
It was fine. It was fine. Let's see how it winds up. But Spaghetti, I don't know if you heard, Money. Spaghetti assures us there are things that are still going to happen.
Yeah, we know. So that's why they couldn't die.
I'm just saying that, yeah.
Things are going
to
happen.
That's what you can't. If you wipe them out all in episode 3, it's like, then what are 4, 5, and 6? You have to, you know, keep leading.
What I'm not going to be able to stomach is, in just like in Lord of the Rings, everybody ends up living. Or almost everybody. We can't have it.
That's not going to happen.
We can't have it. This Danny or Snow, they have to kill each other.
And if it
the Mountain and the Hound, everybody knows that one's coming. Okay, that one's going to happen. But, like, Arya is going to have to be put in a tough spot and, like, kill the Hound or something.
I'm just afraid that they make it to 4 TV and they do let some characters live. Because I do think the books will be vastly different from how the show ends now.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Jon plus Robb Stark would be the best army ever. Robb outsmarted the Lannisters. On another note, I miss Robb.
That was sad.
That was my favorite one. At Edward L. Murphy. On another note, I miss Robb.
I'm going to need a moment here.
He's been gone for 5 seasons.
Do I miss Robb Stark? Him. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Is stuff going to happen coming up? Yes, it is. Am I sad about the Night King? No, I am not.
Something's going to happen. They couldn't kill him they're going to be part of it.
Who do you like less, the Night King or Daniel Jones, Spaghetti?
Ooh, good one.
Or Gettleman?
No, Gettleman. That's easy. The minute you said his
That was
name.
Quick.
Yeah.
All right. Good times, Matt Money Smith. A pleasure to see you once again. You too, Eddie Spaghetti. Good times in Nashville, Tennessee. Great thanks to you and to Ryan Bartlett and everybody else who helped out so much with getting it all together for you. Hope you checked it out. You can still go back and look at all the good times with all those first round fancy pants. NFL.com/DDFP is how you do that. Until next time, sometime later this week, as a matter of fact, It's been a thin slice of heaven.